into the Nick Baugh Podcast, coming to you live from the AOI Studios, a.k.a. my basement office. I love it in this office. And when I was making my office into a podcast room, I had a vision of what I wanted, and AOI made it come true. The desk, the design of it, the chairs, just all looks great. It's comfortable. I love it. And I've told you about the desk and the Aeron chair that I'm currently sitting in from Herman Miller with AOI. But you got to understand, AOI does it all. Whether it's construction or furniture, AOI will help make your ideas a reality, just like they did for me. You got to check out AOI on the web, aoicorp.com, or give them a call, 402-896-5520. All right, on today's pod, ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis. This was a blast. Jay's just an amazing guy, super talented, obviously, but just an awesome dude. I first met Jay back in 2008 when ESPN College Game Day actually did a game of mine my senior year at Creighton. It was Creighton at Southern Illinois in January of 2008, and Game Day came to Carbondale, and then, you know, Billis and Shulman and Aaron Andrews were on the call for the game. And of course, I knew I wanted to be a college basketball analyst. I've told you guys a million times, you know, if I could hit $500 million Powerball tomorrow, I would still want to call college basketball games on TV. I mean, this is my 100% dream job. So naturally, because of knowing that, I just hawked Jay when I met him at shoot around that day. I was all over him, asking him questions. I got his contact information. And the guy has just been great to me ever since, man. For 12 years now, anytime I've ever reached out with a text message to Jay, he always gets back to me. Always. And that means a lot. Like, his support and encouragement for me, especially right when I graduated, meant a ton. You know, I mean, it was a slow process for me to, you know, finally kind of crack through and get games on national TV. And you know, he was very encouraging and supportive of me. And that meant a lot. And so to have him on my podcast, just, it shows you how good of a dude he is. You know, I mean, this is a guy that, I mean, think about it. He was in Waco, Texas, doing College Game Day, Baylor, Kansas on Saturday. Then he flew to Florida and called Louisville, Florida State on Monday night. And then I'm recording this on a Tuesday, February 25th, almost 3 o'clock. And so this dude, then the next day, takes 30 minutes out of his day to chat with me. So it's just, he's an amazing guy. You guys are going to love this. We hit on just about everything. We talk about the old College Game Day game he did of mine. It's funny to get his take on it. But he gives us some great Bill Raftery stories. We get into how we both kind of prep for games. And then, you know, we talk a ton of college basketball, who he thinks is the best team. We talk about Kansas and Duke and who he sees as the National Player of the Year, Fred Hoiberg and Nebraska. And, of course, Jay Billis gives his thoughts on the Creighton Blue Jays and what he thinks their ceiling is this year. And his answer might surprise you. This was just great. So let's get to it, man. Here is my podcast conversation with ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis. Well, on the line right now is a guy that needs no introduction, so I'm not going to give him an introduction. He's Jay Billis, ESPN college basketball analyst. Jay, it's got to be the busiest time of the year for you, so I appreciate you taking some time out. How you doing?
Always a pleasure, Nick. I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing awesome. I got to assume you're not as tired as you were when you were calling games back in the day in the old Big East with Raftery. Like, how exhausted were you on a day-to-day basis with all the late-night Diet Pepsis you'd have with Raft?
I felt great. I never had a problem. It was my liver that had the real problem. That was the issue. It wasn't anything but that.
I've gotten to know Raft a little bit over the last handful of years. He is just, I tell people all the time, like, he's exactly what you see is what you get. He is just a joy to be around. That had to have been like some of the most fun periods of time of your career, calling games with him.
There's no question. I mean, there was nothing better than that, and that's not to slight anything or anybody I've worked on or with over the years. It's just Bill Raftery is a different breed, and everything is fun. And I actually told my wife when we started doing Big Monday, Sean McDonough, Raft, and I did Big Monday for, I don't know how many years, it was a while. I told her, I said, look, I'm never saying no to Raftery. So if he wants to go out before the game, during the game, after the game, I'm going. Yeah. And if I have to crawl to the airport the next day and I feel like death for 5 days after, I'm doing it.
Smart.
And never once regretted it.
No, I totally agree. Is it hard? I've called games, but never with a second analyst. Is a three-man booth hard? Is it challenging? Raft would be easy because he's, you know, he's quick and succinct, and you know he's so fun to be around. But is it harder with three guys?
Not really. Not when it's with guys like Raftery and McDonough, and it was really just like sitting watching the game with your two best friends. And so were there adjustments that all of us had to make? Yes. But it was really seamless, and it didn't take long for me to sort of figure out that, look, if somebody makes a steal at half court and takes it in for a dunk, there's no analysis for me required. You know, Raftery would just say, send it in, big fella, you know, and do all that stuff.
Yes.
And there were other things that he felt like he would just point to me and say, you take it.
Right.
You know, we had a routine that every pregame when we would, you know, go over our sort of pre-show meeting, and the producer would say, you know, Jay, you take Zegarowski and Raft, you take Howard. He would go, well, I wanted Zegarowski. and he would fake fighting over what was assigned to me. And we would just laugh the whole time. And, whenever McDonough would be telling a story about a player playing with a heavy heart because his dog was struck by a car or something, go into the story about that's making everybody cry.
Yeah.
Someone would throw a great pass and Raftery would say, great look. And Sean would go crazy over it. Now, you know, you have to do that now. And so we would compete to see if we could make Sean mad. Over
oh,
like that.
That's too good. I always wonder if, I feel bad for the people that have to do the closed captioning if they're not familiar with Raft. You know what I mean? Like, they have to be typing in, like, what did he just say? Lingerie and the onions? You know, like, if you're not familiar with his style and his vernacular, it's going to be a little new to you.
Yeah, and a little bit, you know, you have to get used to some of the references, and
yes,
some of which go towards his late-night activities. And like, he would... Back in the day when he would say, you know, UConn running the stagger, McDonough would always follow by, yeah, that from our resident expert on staggers, staggering out of the establishment.
Yes, that is fantastic. That is fantastic. Do you remember, as we're kind of in memory lane mode here, the college game day game you did of mine, Creighton at Southern Illinois in 2008 in Carbondale, Illinois. I don't even have to check this. That had to have been the worst game for college game day. The final score, I just looked it up, Jay. It was 48-44. Southern Illinois held us to one field goal in the final 10 minutes of the game. So 12 years later, after the fact, I apologize for how ugly that game was.
Yeah, there's a lot of apologies that need to go around for that game day. One, Carbondale, which is a difficult place to get to, which I didn't realize at the time. We had to fly into St. Louis and drive, and there was a nightmare associated with that on the way back. But a very nice people, and we had a good time there. But when you're doing a game where you have to, where the best you have is to use the telestrator on a closeout, you got a rough night.
There's no question about it. I will say this, though. You said something about me in that game that sticks with me when I prep and now call games. Now, I may or may not have paid you $5 to say it at Shoot Around, but you said, Nick Baugh may not be Creighton's best player, but he's their most important player. And that got relayed to me, and then I watched it. That meant a ton for you to say that. And I try to remember that little anecdote when I'm calling games to when I'm prepping, because these games mean a lot to a lot of people. And even that seventh guy off the bench, the walk-on that gets it, it's important to know their story, their name. Like, that little anecdote from you has like stuck with me when I prep even today.
Well, it's nice of you to say. You must have been the guy that scored in the last 10 minutes.
I was.
For the Blue Jays. But you know, on a serious note, I mean, I've always sort of remembered something from when I was a player, that how seriously my mom took it. and you know, she saved all these tapes and the back then it was VHS. And so if somebody said something bad about me or good or whatever, my mom took it really, really hard.
Yes.
And so I always thought about that while, you know, the masses may not think this is an important player or this is an important game, it's important to the people playing it and it's important to the people that are watching. And most people are watching for a reason. And if you don't think it's a highly rated game, whatever, some people are really watching for a reason. So, you know, you try to give it your best effort and dig in as much as you can because every game's important.
There's no doubt about it. Okay, so let's talk enough memory lane of Nick Baugh's three-pointer he hit with 12 minutes left in Carbondale. Let's talk about this year. Who is the who's the best team to you? I mean, has Kansas separated themselves?
I don't know that they've separated, but I think their best is the best I've seen.
Okay.
Florida State's best is seems like it can choke off anybody's offense that hopes to run any, and then you're going to have to just make basketball plays rather than run plays.
Mm-hmm.
I've been really impressed with Baylor's defense, and I like, I like Dayton a lot. I think Dayton's got an opportunity to do what Butler did back in 2010, maybe 2011, and break through and make a Final Four because they've got pros, and they've got depth and they're men. But I just don't see anybody that's going to overwhelm with talent. And it's not like 2015 where you had a 38-0 Kentucky heading into the Final Four and, Duke with three lottery picks, three freshman lottery picks and Wisconsin had Kaminsky and, mm-hmm. and all those guys that was a great team. And you knew those were Final Four teams. This year, there are more teams that you're going, okay, well, I can see how they could lose in the Sweet 16, or I could see how they could get clipped in the second round. I don't think anybody can win this year. I don't go for the whole, you know, parity across the board thing, but I do go with the, you know, after the first couple rounds, anybody can lose.
Right.
And that may be a distinction without a difference to some people, but, you know, it's weird. Like, before this weekend where you had, San Diego State got beat and all that stuff. And the top four teams, Baylor, Kansas, San Diego State and Gonzaga from January 1 were 52-1. And that one was Baylor beating Kansas.
Right.
And sort of after that, you know, Gonzaga got beat by BYU and you had, you had San Diego State going down to UNLV and everybody see it's crazy. Now it's like 55-4,
right.
And that doesn't sound like parity. But I think those teams have been winning, at that level because they're just more consistent rather than being head and shoulders above the rest, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes total sense to me. I want to talk about a team that I'm familiar with and here in my neck of the woods, Creighton, where, I mean, they're arguably the hottest team in the country or one of the hottest teams in the country. They've won 9 of their last 10 games. They've won road games at Nova, at Seton Hall, at Marquette. They just beat the brakes off Butler, which, I mean, Jay, you know, that doesn't happen. I mean, a program like Butler doesn't, you know, get beat by 20, 25 points with regularity. When you look at Creighton, what's Creighton's ceiling to you, Jay?
Oh, they can be in Atlanta because they can score. I mean, they're ridiculous. You see it all the time. They're ridiculously hard to guard, and the actions that they run, the player and ball movement, and then the fact that they've got, I mean, I call it shot credibility. They've got so many guys that can make shots from different spots and from deep that they can stretch a defense. And then all of a sudden, if they make a ball fake, shot fake, whatever, guys are flying all over the place and you have to close out, and they're really good cutters, good passers. But I think at Biggie's play, they're shooting 40% from three, and, you know, they put up 90 in all these guys. Like they score easily.
Mm-hmm.
And, Mitch Ballack's a great shooter, and, you know, Tyshawn Alexander can score and guard. And I'm not sure that they're more than a handful of guards point guards you would say are as good or better than Marcus Zagorowski. I mean, he's legit. He reminds me a lot of except I think there are times when I think he's better in college. Reminds me a lot of Fred VanVleet with the way he plays.
Yes.
And he's really, really good. So I think, you know, Creighton, Villanova doesn't defend great, but they can score. Those teams, I think could very well, you know, wind up in the Final Four. I don't know that I would say, okay, well, I would favor them over Kansas, a team like Kansas, but because they can shoot it, from so many spots, I could certainly see them winning a game in the tournament against them, even though in a 7-game series, right, I would favor Kansas.
You know, it used to be, and this is, I mean, obviously the game's evolving, where if you didn't have size, boy, you were just, it was eventually going to catch up to you. And Creighton plays small ball. I mean, there's times they play Damian Jefferson and Denzel Mahoney at the 4 and the 5 at basically 6'5 and 6'6. But nowadays, you can kind of get away with that. But, I mean, you saw a guy in Azubuike over the weekend that just, I mean, that was one of the most dominant performances you'll see from an old-school, true kind of center. How do you see Creighton's small ball when they get maybe into the NCAA tournament and they run into some teams that do have size?
Well, if they can spread it and you can pull a guy like Azubuike away from the basket and knock some threes down and all that, I think I would compare it to like when Kansas played VCU in the NCAA tournament. You know, but VCU pressed a lot back then, but they hit a ton of threes and just kind of kept Kansas on a string and kept them chasing. And that's one thing it's among the things that Creighton can do, is they can get a defense to chase them. And, but in a half court game, it is going to be difficult for Creighton or anybody else at 6'5" to deal with Azubuike, not, you know, setting a screen and rolling to the basket, and them just throwing it up there. And then Kansas is so good at turning a corner and getting into the lane and forcing help. And once they toss it up there, you know, 6'5", 6'9", it doesn't matter. You help up against them and don't stay connected as Azubuike, you're done.
Yep.
But if he's got to go out and chase a little bit and guard, you know, you trade 3 for 2 most often again. And if you can hit 12, 13 threes against Kansas, you can beat them.
Sure. Sure. I'm curious. I want to get your thoughts on last thing on Creighton here on Greg McDermott. I mean, he's built three different, basically top 10 teams in the past 7 years with, you know, Doug and Gibbs and those guys. And then a couple years ago before Maurice Watson tore his ACL, that team was 18-1 or 17-1. And I think got all the way up to 7th in the country. And now this Creighton team's in the top 10. What do you think of Greg McDermott, the job he's done at Creighton?
I think he's a great coach. I mean, I first got to know who he was in Northern Iowa, and then he went to Iowa State, and I thought did a good job there, but it didn't quite work out for him. And then obviously he's done an amazing job at Creighton, but he can really coach offense. Like, I know he's a good defensive coach and all that, but he's an offensive savant. Mm-hmm. And it kind of reminds me when I watch Creighton play, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I understand it. I appreciate it. Because I'm not in their practices every day to be able to break it down for you. You can do that, but it reminds me of when I was a high school college kid, and when you would watch the Russian team play, that they were doing things that you're going, geez, you just don't see that very often,
right?
And the actions that they ran, and actually there are some things they do that you don't see anybody else do, and action against the grain, and they're just really hard to guard. And they make you make choices all the time. And, you know, they've got you turn your head, they're gone. It's really fun to watch. And it can't be any fun to guard. And it certainly can't be fun. It's not like you can go through a scouting report on Creighton and say, okay, take this away from this guy, and then we take away this ball reversal and we're fine. You're not going to do that. Their cutting and movement and ball movement is so good. And then they shoot the ball at times where you're just not used to it. You're not used to taking it away there, and they can have you shaking your head hanging your head
right
in a hurry.
Let's talk about Duke for a second here. There are only three teams in the top 10 in KenPom of offensive and defensive efficiency. There's Kansas, San Diego State, and then Duke. Is Duke a team that you think is could absolutely go to Atlanta Final Four caliber?
Yes. At their best, they're as good as anyone. And they've got a great point guard. Like Trey Jones is a great point guard. Yeah. And I think if he stays at Duke, he'll go down as maybe the best one they've ever had. I think he's phenomenal defensively. He's a great passer, a handler, leader, and he's improved as a scorer. And then Vernon Carey is a special freshman with his ability to score with his back to the basket. He's a load in the post. The one thing, like in certain games this year, they've played young, where you know maybe Cassius Stanley or Matthew Hurd or some of these guys they don't kind of play through some difficulties. It happened against NC State. It's happened in some other games. But they've had so many players. Like I think it's kind of amazing the record they have. I don't know what they are, 23-4 or something. And they've won some really high level games, like the game, you know, the game they wound up winning against North Carolina. Even though North Carolina is not a great team this year, they played great on that night.
Yes,
and I was there. Most teams would have lost that game to them. And then they turned around and beat Florida State, where that was a classic letdown game. And they waited to have their letdown against NC State later, but they're good. They're very good. But the young kind of gives you a little bit of pause, especially this year, where I think some of the experienced teams are going to have a little bit of an edge over talent. And Duke is not like if Duke had last year's team this year, you'd say, okay, they're Final Four. But they don't. They don't have that overwhelming talent. They've got a lot more. They appear younger in certain games.
A few more things I'll let you run, Jay. I Nebraska with Fred Hoiberg, they're obviously not having a great year this year. It's understandable where they basically put together a brand new team in the span of like a month and a half. But I'm curious how you see Fred Hoiberg at Nebraska and how you kind of see the Nebraska job, because you know it's kind of been a pseudo graveyard for coaches. I mean, it's still the only power conference school to have never won an NCAA tournament game. But, Jay, the arena is packed. The facilities are great. So it's like they do have things kind of working for them. How do you see Hoiberg, Nebraska, and things moving forward?
I think, Nick, it's set up to make a good move. And, you know, I mean, I kind of snarkily several years ago when I was on a radio station, radio interview in Lincoln, and they were asking me, they were tired of the coach they had, and they were asking me, you know, should there be a change made? And I kind of jokingly said with some snark, you know, until the current coach hangs as many NCAA tournament banners as is already up there, I think you should fire him. And they said, well, there aren't any NCAA tournament banners. I went, exactly.
Yes.
Like, there's no tradition there. Like, give the guy a break.
Right.
You know, you got to – it requires an institutional commitment that Nebraska just hasn't made to basketball yet, but they have now. And so with Fred there, he's an outstanding coach and a great guy. And I think he'll do extraordinarily well there, but now the facilities and all that matches the challenge that is in front of them in the Big Ten. And so I think Fred will do a great job. He needs to get some more players in there, and he will. And I think it'll wind up looking a lot like Iowa State did under him, where they can get up and down the floor. They shoot a lot of threes. They run a pro style offense. People want to play, players will want to play there and play for him. And he's got a background there.
Yep.
So it everything fits. And I think with a little bit of time, I think people are already feeling it, that they've seen some positive movement, and they've been like that game they had against Maryland. They've won some games. It's been a rough year, but there are some positive steps being taken. So I don't have any doubt Fred will do really well there.
National Player of the Year front runner. Who you got right now on February 25th?
It's hard to go away from Luka Garza of Iowa, but I'm going to do it because I think Obi Toppin of Dayton has been the Player of the Year. And, you know, in a year where this is not a very good draft year, it's going to be largely rotational players. He's a lottery pick and a top five pick, I think. I've been watching him all year long. I watched him last year, and I felt like he was going to make a big jump. I didn't think it'd be this big, but he's legit, and they are legit. They play two. You've seen them. They play two point guards in with Jalen Crutcher and Rodney Chapman, and They're very, very good. And I think that kid, Trey Landers, is as important a player as there is in, to any team. He's not as important as Nick Baugh was back in the old Creighton days, but he's pretty important.
You can't go against what you said back in 2008. You can't deviate from that.
Yeah, I couldn't have been wrong. That would never have happened.
I couldn't. Well, a couple rapid-fire questions, and we'll get you out of here, Jay. Since you joined ESPN, best college player you've seen live is who?
Kevin Durant. Yeah, Kevin Durant was so good. I mean, I know there are other guys that were older and played a more mature game. I mean, the best player I probably saw in college overall live was Tim Duncan.
Yep.
Aside from the guys I played against, I mean, I played against Michael Jordan and Len Bias and Ralph Sampson. They were pretty good. But to watch, I would say Duncan was the best overall. But I would put Durant there. I mean, I haven't seen anybody score like him.
What about best college team you've covered since joining ESPN?
Wow. That would probably be the 96 Kentucky team.
Yep.
They were ridiculously good, and wound up winning the title that year, and had nothing but pros on that team. So I would say that team, but that's a tough one. That's a really good question. I don't know. Duke 2001 was really good.
Yeah.
With Jay Williams and, Shane Battier and Mike Dunleavy, Carlos Boozer. They had a bunch of pros on that team too. But it's funny, and that's when you start thinking about this year, that's what we're devoid of this
Man.
Year, are pros like that.
That's
we don't
right.
have teams full of pros.
That's exactly right. Hardest, because you obviously do stuff for the NBA draft, what's the hardest aspect of the draft to evaluate now? I know that's kind of like a broad one, but is it just kind of projecting big men, or, you know, like what's the hardest thing to project now or evaluate?
Wow, that's a good question. As you know, the game keeps changing.
Yeah.
So keeping up with that and wrapping your head around that. For me, early on, it took me a while to catch up to, you know what, the high school players don't get caught up in what they because they can play. Like, I kind of got caught up in Dwight Howard was just an athlete when he came out, and he was unskilled, and he was, but. So what?
Right.
Because his athletic gifts trumped any lack of skill that he had. And so I got over that. And now getting over the fact, and to your point about the big guys, like, there was a time, and I think it even extends to today, where, you know, you're looking at Luka Doncic and DeAndre Ayton and thinking, man, don't you have to go with Ayton? And the answer is no, you don't.
Right.
And
right.
Ayton's great. Like, he's having a great career, but Doncic is transformational. And so probably wrapping your head around that. And then I got over this a long time ago, just accepting that when you are laying out what you think about 60 players in the draft, that you're going to miss on a few.
No doubt.
And so you just have to let it rip. And if you miss, so what? Because like the teams, they're stuck with the guys they draft. And obviously our jobs are not as important as the jobs they do. But when you put that many opinions out there, you're gonna whiff on a few, and the ones you whiff up to you for the rest of your life. But that's this is the business we've chosen,
no
and
doubt.
You have to deal with it.
If you were a coach, would you foul up three?
I would. Yeah, I did a game the other day where Bill Self did not.
Yep.
And he doesn't that very often, if at all. But I would. Too many things. The only thing I thought of, though, against Baylor is a good reason not to have done it there is Baylor's such a good offensive rebounding team that maybe that's the better part of valor not to do it there because of it. But that's a legit sort of strategy reason. Too many things have to happen for you to get tied, whereas only one thing has to happen if you allow them to take a three.
Right.
And, you know, like in the Duke Carolina game, I mean, that thing, you know, that the shot that that Trey Jones missed on purpose. That was 1 in 100.
Yes.
But maybe that's that. And that's being generous to the odds. I mean, that could have gone straight up. It could have gone straight down. It could have gone all over the place. He not only had to chase it, you know, have it come off exactly right. He had to chase it down and then make the shot.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot had to happen there. So I'd still foul.
Final one. Favorite podcast you've ever been on hosted by a former Creighton guard?
Oh God, it would have to be
Kyle Korver.
Yeah, it would have to be Korver's podcast because that was really legit. That was a lot of fun. Then Dana Altman has a great podcast. Oh. Well, it was a former coach.
Sure, sure. Yeah,
I'd probably have to go with yours. Yeah. Well, it's not the best podcast, but it's the most important.
Yes, that is a mic drop. Best way to finish it right there. Jay, you've always been good to me. You always get back to me when I reach out to you. I think the world of you, my man. Thank you so much for hopping on my podcast.
Oh, right back at you, man. You're a true pro, and it's a pleasure to know you.
A Parkville Media Production.